Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Chatting with Sherry. Tonight we're going to chat with Eileen Mueller. She's an award-winning author. She wrote a series called Urza and the Dragon Hero, and she's got books 1 and 2. They're a young adult fantasy series. Dean O'Gorman, who played Philly the Dwarf in Lord of the Rings, said it was a great fantasy read. I hope you enjoy. This is a recorded show, so please don't call in. Thank you. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Sherry. It's great to be here.
I'm glad to have you here. It's really exciting. Welcome to Chatting with Sherry. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your background?
Oh, my name is Eileen Mueller, and I've been writing for about 9 years. And in fact, the book that we're going to be talking about today is the first book I ever wrote 9 years ago. And it's been a long journey to get it into the stores, and I'm finally there. Apart from that, I have four dragonettes, shall we call them, that I live with, and a mysterious shapeshifter in my little cave on the side of the hill in New Zealand. I sing in a barbershop chorus called Fault Line, because we live in a city that's prone to earthquakes. I've won a couple of awards for my writing, which has been fun, and I'm part of an amazing writing community here in New Zealand that are very supportive in the speculative fiction community.
That's cool.
That's me.
That's really cool. I love what you call your family.
Yeah.
Not a sci-fi fan at all, man.
Yeah, they might call me the chief dragon at times. We'll see.
The lady dragon.
Well, in fact, actually, I'm beginning to become a little bit known among children as the dragon lady because a friend of mine works for Weta Sound. She's a sound engineer, and so she does sound on Sir Peter Jackson's amazing films. And she had a science fiction and fantasy wedding at the beginning of the year, so we could go along in costume. And I decided I was going to make some dragon wings and wear them to her wedding. So I went along just as a dragon with brightly coloured hair, and we dyed my hair purple and blue and all sorts of crazy colours. And I turned up with these big dragon wings and horns on my head. I also wear a really nice plain dress, because if everyone else was dressed up and no one was in costume, I didn't want to look ridiculous. But when I got there, half the people were in costume and half were in wedding attire, so I was a mix of the two, which was fine. But since then, I've used that costume at book festivals and when I do school visits with children and things, and so it's quite fun. So yeah, there's a few dragons roaming around here in Wellington.
That is so funny. It's so sweet, though.
Yeah, actually, at our airport in Wellington, there is a massive model of Smaug from Sir Peter Jackson, and you can go up and stand near Smaug and his eyes. Smaug, the dragon from The Lord of the Rings?
Mm-hmm.
And his eyes sort of light up and little things happen as you stand there, and growls and things, so that's quite fun.
That's at the airport?
Yeah, that's at the airport. It's at the airport as you're leaving. So he's actually sending you out of Wellington to the departure area. He's sending you out of Wellington, giving you a fiery send-off as you leave. There are also some giant eagles that Gandalf flies on. Gandalf's flying on them, and they're hanging in the middle of the main airport as well. So it's sort of fun living in what we call Wellywood, Wellington.
That is so funny.
Yeah.
Well, your New Zealand is very important to me because it's one of my favorite shows. Xena came from New Zealand.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, so there's a lot of the actors named, like, one Lucy Lawless and a lot of people like that. It's so beautiful.
Yeah, it's a very lush country with a lot of, we don't call it forest, we call it bush. That's how weird. Someone gets upset and goes off somewhere, we say, oh, he's gone bush. So there's a lot of bush here, and Wellington is like that. We've got, our houses are sort of settled in amongst the bush. In fact, I'm sitting here looking at the bush, and I live 3 minutes from the centre of town.
That's interesting. It's so pretty from the stuff I've seen. But it's really interesting. I'm really into watching Blue Planet and stuff like that about the environment. And they talk a lot about Australia and New Zealand. And one of the things they talk about, you have a very active island. Islands.
Yeah, we do.
Volcanically.
Yeah, volcanic and earthquake-wise, yeah, you name it, we've got it. And we also get, you know, yesterday was beautiful weather here. It was gorgeous just in the morning, absolutely sunny, and in the evening there was a storm. You know, it's very changeable because we live on such a small landmass. There's a lot of ocean around us, and the weather can just roll in and change in an instant.
That must be strange. It's I mean, we have to, I live in California, and we have to layer for the day.
Mm-hmm.
We have to wear, like, the morning it's cooler, and then by mid-afternoon, especially right now in the fall here in Northern Hemisphere. So morning we wear long sleeve t-shirts or sweaters or whatever, and then you have to have another layer, like a t-shirt, and then by midday it gets really hot again, even though it's fall. So
yeah,
you're wearing
a tank top. Yep, I get that. And also the other thing about Wellington is that it's very windy. So we have the coast all around us. North, there's no coast, that's land. But to the west, the east and the south, there is coast. So there's a lot of wind. And so we all joke that everybody in Wellington walks on a slant and that, you know, if it's quiet, actually when it's a calm day, it's really warm. It's actually very nice out there, but we're used to having a breeze, yeah, and sometimes quite a fierce one. So, yeah, that's par for course. And if we go anywhere else, it's really strange when there's no wind blowing. But anyway, that's the weather, Sherry.
And now for the news.
Now the news, yeah.
You've been writing these books, but when did you start writing? Did you write as a little girl?
Yeah, I remember as a child, my sister and I writing plays. And creating a stage at home and making a whole family come and watch them.
I did that too.
And yeah, my favourite one was The Two Soldiers. I don't remember anything about what it was about, just that we were two soldiers and everyone had to come and watch us. Well, it was quite funny. And so someone asked me once, did you write as a child? And I said, no. Oh, yes, I did. And as a teenager, I wrote a lot. I wrote a lot of, you know, going through that teenage angsty phase, and I wrote a lot of dark stories then, and I also wrote, you know, wrote other stuff too, but it never ever, no one ever saw it. I had a teacher once say, oh, I think you should write something that you know of, and I had actually written about a personal experience, and I thought, oh, well, she didn't get that, so I didn't show my writing to anyone for years. When I went to university, I stopped writing because I was writing, you know, technical papers, and, well, not technical, but, you know, I did a business degree, so it was all business-oriented stuff, and I actually stopped reading. I was reading so many textbooks that I just stopped reading, and I had always been a great reader, and it wasn't until maybe a year after I finished university that I picked up a book again, because there was so much pressure to read so much material. And then I realised someone gave me a novel to beta read 10 years ago. Her name was Mandy Ellsworth, and she writes clean romance. And she gave me a novel, and fantasy as well. This is a fantasy book, and she gave me a novel to read. And I read it and thought, wow, I could write something. I used to write. I could do this. And it was a good novel that she gave me. So I started to think about writing and reading a lot again. And then I thought, well, what would I write about? And I had a son that was dragon crazy, absolutely dragon crazy. He used to save up his pocket money, and we would go online, and he would buy dragon models. And so he had this huge collection of about 30 dragon models.
Oh, my God.
And we have some really bizarre dragons. You know, we have ones made of metal that are sort of 1.5 feet high, and then we've got, you know, the classics, the little dragon statuettes. He's in his 20s now, so they're all in the attic. But I thought I would write a dragon story for him. And so when you write a book, you have to start somewhere. So I saw the wingtip of a dragon in my mind's eye, a multicoloured wingtip. And then I had to think, well, who's looking at the wingtip? And why are they there? And so I started my first draft of this this book, which is now out. And why did it take 9.5 years to get to publication? Because when I wrote that first story, I wrote every evening. I had 4 children. I wrote every evening, just quietly on my own. And at the end of a year, I had 223,000 words.
Wow.
A novel is often 80,000. And 223, I believe, is about 2/3 of the size of the Lord of the Rings trilogy. So I overshot the mark. I did 13 revisions over the course of a year and still didn't think it was quite ready. And then started going to do online writing courses and a great course called How to Revise a Novel by Holly Lyle, who's a well-known science fiction fantasy author. And at the end of that, I thought my novel was done, but when I read it, I still wasn't quite happy with it. So I put it away for years. Oh, it won an award. The opening chapters of the manuscript won a small award here in New Zealand from the Speculative Fiction Society of New Zealand. And someone offered to publish it, but I still wasn't happy. And it wasn't until I took it to my critique group, they said, this is an amazing story, but it needs rewriting because you didn't know how to write back then. So, yeah, new plot, new characters, but same, now essentially the same basic story. But, you know, with whole new plot, whole new characters, better conflict, better writing, no head hopping, all the mistakes you make as a first-time writer. And this has been such a long journey, Sherry, that I understand why they say never publish your first novel. Because usually your first novel, you're learning how to write. And it takes, they say it takes a million words for a writer to be good. And I've done well over 1 million now, and I would agree with that. Your first 1 million words just, you know, they just need honing until you get there.
And yet there's some people's first books who become super sensations. You never know.
Yeah, like, that's true, actually. Like Stephanie Meyer with Twilight and J.K. Rowling, too. But, you know, some of them, I know Stephanie did a degree in literature, so, you know, some people study that stuff more. Yeah, I've heard that 1 million words touted around a lot. I don't know who ever said that originally.
I never heard that before, actually. To be honest, I've never heard it.
Oh, wow, I heard that really often.
Really? Maybe it's a thing down under. Maybe it's something with your writer's groups there, because I've never heard it.
Oh, that's interesting.
Huh. Now I did. Now everybody has.
There it goes. I just found it online. My advice to young people, to the young writer, is like to be unpalatable in an age of instant success. It was David Eddings, an American novelist who was famous as epic fantasy books, once gave the following advice to new writers. My advice to the young writer is like to be unpalatable in an age of instant successes and meteoric falls. I tell the neophyte, write 1 million words, the absolute best you can write, then throw it all away and bravely turn your back on what you have written. At that point, you're ready to begin. So, it's interesting. It says it's come from a number of sources. Your first 1 million words don't count. And they're saying it seems negative because they do count. They're the words you use to hone your craft and to learn the strategies. Yeah, so I think there's always going to be exceptions, but it just takes time to learn to be a good writer. And I belong to 2 critique groups. So one of them meets twice a month and the other one once a month. So 3 times a month, we're critiquing each other's work, and some months it ends up being 50 to 55,000 words you're critiquing other people's work, and we're very, very picky. Yeah, we each have our definite styles, and we understand that everybody's styles are different, and sometimes our genres are slightly different, but we have quite a high standard when it comes to what we do and don't like in writing, so it's quite interesting. It's helped all of us to develop better.
That's cool. That's really cool. Now my next question is going to be kind of silly, but you've been going around now working on your book. You've won some awards. You've gone to conventions. What do you think of the fans, the book fans?
Well, when they voted me for an award, I was absolutely stoked. So I love them. Stoked is a Kiwi word. It means thrilled. Yeah, so I love fans. I think they're great. And at conventions, there seem to be 2 camps at our New Zealand conventions. And by the way, the Worldcon is happening here in Wellington in 2020. So if any of your fans out there are interested in coming to New Zealand, or writers, they're going to be lining up a good program for writers. If you're interested in coming to New Zealand, 2020 is the time to do it. And if you Google WorldCon, Jacinda Ardern, who is our Prime Minister, then you will find a video clip, a YouTube clip of Jacinda welcoming all of you to New Zealand in 2020.
This sounds like fun. My first time going to a con was the local con here in San Diego. And, I mean, not my first time going to a con, but going as a writer. And I was scared because I'd been to a lot of conventions as a fan, but I'd never been as a writer, and I was really, really scared. And it was a small convention. I mean, it's not, we're not talking Comic-Con or something. And so I was like, I drove to the convention, and I'm sitting there waiting. You get your credentials, and then I'm sitting there waiting for my turn, and I have this bottle of water in my hand, and I'm squeezing it.
Did you get a geyser?
Almost. One of the other writers that was with me, he said, you know, that thing's going to burst. And I went, I didn't even realize I was doing it. I go, oh, I'm sorry. And I put it down. And he says, it's okay. What's wrong? I go, nothing. I'm just really nervous. The thing was, Eileen, my first time at my first panel, a very famous science fiction writer was sitting next to me. And he turned out to be the sweetest man, and I love him. But it was Larry Niven.
Oh, great.
Yeah. And he was lovely, but I was scared. I'm going, I'm sitting next to one of the really great science fiction writers, and I'm a neophyte.
Look, I understand that completely. I'm not sure if you know Juliette Marillier, who writes a lot of sort of, you know, fairy, fae, fantasy, and she's very, very popular across the world. You know, she sold millions of books. So I was at a convention sitting next to Juliet, and she looked at me and said, what's wrong? And I said, well, you know, I've been nominated for awards before, but I've never actually won a big one. And she said to me, she patted my hand and said, don't worry, just wait and see. You know, you never know, you know. And then she stood up and went to the front of the room to give out the awards, and she didn't know who was winning them. And I was thinking, oh, maybe I should just leave and go into my quiet little corner somewhere. There's moments like that where you think, is all this writing worth it? And then she opened the envelope and read out my name. And I walked to the front of the room and stood there crying, and I was speechless. And the people who knew me in the audience were laughing because they know that I'm never speechless. And I said, all I can say is thank you.
Hey,
and the presenters were even laughing because they knew me, and they said, oh, we you know, here's Eileen speechless. I was just so gobsmacked. I had so not expected to win that award. I was up against some fantastic writers, you know. And I was absolutely thrilled. So that was my Larry Niven moment, was when I was sitting next to Juliette Marillion, who was very lovely. She's absolutely fantastic. And we spent a lot of the weekend with her, and she was just, very down to earth and absolutely wonderful and encouraging to everybody who was writing and to all the fans as well.
I know.
Very lovely lady.
When you meet these people, they're like really wonderful and sweet and kind, but you're just like, in your mind, you've built them up.
And they're all human beings.
I know. I mean, incredibly human.
We all have our humanity in common, don't we?
Yeah. Another person that I met at one of those conventions that I sat on a panel with, and again, nervous. Sherry was really nervous. You know who DC Fontana, she from Star Trek, is? She was Dorothy Fontana. She was sitting next to me.
Wow, that's big, isn't it?
Oh, she was so sweet and funny. And I told her before the panel, because the room was pretty empty before the panel, because she's just like me, comes really early, like 5 minutes before the panel's going to get together.
Well, that's a great strategy, because now you're meeting all the stars.
Yeah, it was so funny. And I'm sitting next to her, and I'm like, just like, I get like almost in a shell. You wouldn't know that from me interviewing.
Yeah.
But I do. And she said, what's wrong? I go, I'm a big fan of yours. And she said, oh, well, that's nice. And we started talking Star Trek, and I started asking her questions about Gene Roddenberry, and she was telling me stuff and really great stories. And I'm like, you know, you're going to have to say some of this over again when they come in. She goes, that's okay. I do it every day. Not a big deal.
Yeah, they get used to the questions that people have.
But she made me feel all comfy, and by the time the people started coming in, I was very comfortable, and that was like 5 minutes.
that's really nice, isn't it? And I think that's what we forget. I used to do a lot of work with politicians. Here in New Zealand, politicians are quite accessible because we're such a small country with only 4.7 million in our population. And I used to do quite a lot of public relations work, and some of it was with politicians. And I remember being terrified of going to speak to them because I didn't feel comfortable. But within 2 or 3 minutes, I realised politicians, they just want people to like them.
Yeah.
So they're going to make it very, very easy. And from then on, it was so easy. In fact, I know Jacinda Ardern. I knew her back in her early 20s before she became Prime Minister. And that's how small New Zealand is. Everybody knows everybody. So it's quite amazing.
That is interesting. Yeah. I'm from sprawling Los Angeles, but I still knew a lot of people.
So we play a game. When I lived in Switzerland for 6 years, and we play a game. And I used to say to the Swiss, whenever I met a New Zealander, I'd say, turn on your stopwatch. And we would rapid-fire questions at each other until we discovered someone we knew or someone we had in common. And often it was 35 seconds. You know, and where did you go to school? Where did you grow up? Where did you live? And bang, within that short amount of time, we'd find someone we knew. Oh, I knew his cousin. I knew his teacher. You know, it usually took we could usually do it within a minute. Every now and then it would take a minute and a half if the connection was more tenuous, but yeah, it's quite interesting.
So how many degrees of separation? I immediately think of the movie.
We had about three.
Three. That's cool. That's, you know, with Kevin Bacon. Yeah.
It's supposed to be seven, isn't it, worldwide?
I think it's seven,
three.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny. And you never know, because I worked in TV and film as an actress, so I actually figured out that I actually have 1 degree of separation from Kevin Bacon.
Oh, that is cool.
Not that anybody I really know personally, it's just people I've worked with, but yeah, 1 degree.
That's still 1 degree.
Yeah. So we're going to the next part, which is basically you telling about your dragon story.
So my series is called Riders of Fire, and the first book is Izara, who's the main, who is the protagonist. And in her village, she grows up completely closeted, has no idea whether dragons really exist, if they're just a myth, and until the Queen of the Dragons turns up in the forest, and they imprint, and she's swept away. And then she discovers that her parents had a dark secret, and that her parents were actually dragon riders. Now, where she lived in Lush Valley, it's a crime to even talk about dragons. You get clapped into prison if you talk about them. You know, in the first scene, she's looking at some cloth that has dragons on it, and there's someone showing her contraband cloth, and and her brother comes over and says, "You shouldn't be looking at that sort of thing. You'll get in trouble." And then by the end of the scene, she's gone off with a dragon, which throws her whole family into turmoil. And the turmoil that her family is thrown into is in book two, Dragon Hero, which is her brother's story, her twin brother. And book one is Azara. It's all about her journey. So she's ignorant, she's backward, and she turns up at Dragon's Hold, and she is the new Queen's Rider. And there's a whole lot of people who are against her because she doesn't know what she's doing. It's basically her journey as a coming-of-age story.
Oh, it sounds adorable.
And the person who's training is her dragon master, who has a dark past, is very mistrustful and is absolutely scornful when she turns up. Just, you know, he can't believe that this ignorant waif has been sent from this backward valley. And what on earth was the dragon doing there anyway? No dragons ever go there, because everybody knows that the people are ignorant and they've got no idea. And here's the queen bringing back this girl. And then we discover that she actually has dragon rider heritage from her parents. So there's a reason. It's a reason why she's been chosen. Yeah.
That's kind of cool. And is there a core a core reason for the story. I mean, what is the lesson?
I think a lot of the theme in the story is nothing is as it seems. Nothing is as it appears. I'm just going to have a look here. So one of the first reviews that popped up, actually, the reader put, really a good book where very little is exactly as it appears. And that's what the book's all about. Who can you trust? Who can't you trust? Here's this young, ignorant girl, but she ends up having hidden talents. She thought life was simple and beautiful in this little valley. She gets yanked down to this dangerous world of politics with traitors in the shadows and everybody who's a bit cutthroat, you know. And she's this innocent girl. And she develops right throughout the story. In the end, she becomes quite a powerful heroine, which is really neat. And you've got this dragon master who's judging her, who thinks she's ridiculous. He has to test her when she first turns up, and within their first meeting, he realizes there's something different about her. He can't quite pinpoint it for a while. He's not sure what it is, but he knows that there's something, that she has this hidden talent and that he never, ever expected it. So he gets thrown right in their first meeting. But there's a lot of treachery. There's traitors, you know. There's lots of traitors in the shadows. There's all sorts of things happening, and so through the whole story, she really doesn't know who she can trust and who she should trust. And I can't give away any spoilers.
Of course not.
Yeah, quite a few twists and turns where you really don't know who's on her side and who isn't. And I think that's what it's about. It's about not judging people, not judging a book by its cover, and getting to know people and how people can grow and develop and change.
It's actually a really good lesson. That's something that is very difficult to learn. Even in my ancient years, I have not figured that out completely yet.
It's so easy to pigeonhole people when you first meet them by the way they look, the way they talk, and then as you get to know them more, there's a whole human being, you know, in there waiting to come out. And Azara gets tested, you know, she's got to, all her skills have got to be tested. Can she, you know, she's quite a good archer, she's terrible at knife throwing, and there are some disastrous consequences as a result of her knife throwing test, where someone gets injured very badly, and so that fires up some hatred against her, because she's made this terrible mistake. But there's something that goes on during that knife throwing incident where she's influenced without people realizing. So it's telepathy in my book. Dragons and their riders have telepathy, which is a very, very common trope in dragon fantasy books. There's battles, there's monsters who, and what actually doesn't come out until the third book is that the monsters are there because there's a human being who's come through a world gate and has cloned all these monsters. So he's brought some special technology along with him, and he's creating these monsters to take over Dragon's Realm. And so she has to battle these monsters. They're called Tharoks. They have a sort of a warthog-like face, and they stand upright, but they're furry with big claws and quite formidable foes.
It's interesting. I mean, what made you think of a warthog?
I have no idea. I just saw their snouts and their fuzzy tusks are a little bit different, but they have, you know, their big long snouts, and I don't know, how does a writer's brain work?
I know, exactly. I'm like a bear or a tiger or something. Something really
big long claws.
Yeah.
But just the head of a warthog. And it's quite funny. I imagined them like Planet of the Apes. The apes are all walking, but they're clothed. You know, in the original Planet of the Apes series, they're all clothed. And so the movie is a little different now. And so that's sort of how I had, and suddenly I had to examine myself years later and go, why are your Tharoks wearing clothing? So now they wear armored breastplates and bits and pieces and big boots, you know, stomping through the forest, killing people. So basically their aim is to capture the people of Dragon's Realm and enslave them. And the Commander Zenz, who is the man who cloned everyone, Commander Zenz lives in Death Valley, and he has got huge slave camps in Death Valley, and he's busy doing something, which you'll find out in book 3 what that is. So there's big slag heaps, and he's mining for something, and nobody knows quite what it is or why, because they haven't figured that out. So yeah, it's a long epic series, so there's a few unresolved threads in each book, but each book can be read in its entirety and you get a satisfying novel out of it.
Oh, that's cool. So if you picked up book two, you wouldn't need to read book one, or you would need to read book one?
I have deliberately written book two, Dragon Hero, so that you can pick it up and just start right from there if you want. Book one is, of course, a standalone because you can read it on its own. Book three, however, you really need to read book one and two to get book three. I'm in the middle of writing book three. You can read it as a standalone. There'll be a lot of allusions to past events. Book three is Dragon Rift, R-I-F-T. That really ties up a whole lot of stuff that happens in book one and two, and then the story sweeps forward.
Cool.
So book one is a Zara story. It's what happens to her. It's about who can she trust, what happens to her as a queen's rider when she ends up riding a queen dragon. And book two is Tamaz's story. He's her twin brother. And it's about the aftermath of what happens when she gets swept away. So within a very short, within a day, his father's imprisoned, his mother is gone, she's had a dreadful crime in her past, which he has to atone for, so she has to leave. And that crime was actually what helped her have her children. So, right in the prologue, you get to see what her crime is.
Oh, okay.
so she leaves. You'll be able to look at that on the look inside. So basically, years ago, she was babysitting the queen dragon's eggs and accidentally touched one and killed a dragonette. And that dragonette gave its life to her so that she could conceive children. And these children have special talents passed to them through the dragon energy that she got. So that's how the magic of my world works. And they went deliberately to live in this backward area where nobody believes in dragons and where dragons are attacked if they turn up, so that they would be away. They ran away because she'd killed one of the queen's dragonettes.
Hmm.
Wow. So that's a little bit of the backstory.
That helps. We're coming to the end. Do you have any events that are coming up that you want people to know about? I mean, I know WorldCon is up to 2 years away, so...
Yes, I have. So Dragon Hero is being released on the 8th of November. Azara has just been released 10 days ago, or nearly 2 weeks actually. And then Dragon Hero is coming out on the 8th of November. So it's a great time to grab a copy when the book is new and fresh, straight off the press. I also have a book launch here in New Zealand, but I guess many of you can't attend that. In mid-November, we're doing the physical book launch in New Zealand, and that will be, we'll have archers there, and everybody can have a turn at archery. There's medieval swordsmen coming to fight. So that's really fun. But apart from that, no, not a lot happening online in the wider community, just the books are up there and ready for people to purchase, so... be great.
And do you have a website that people can come and say hi?
Yeah, sure. I'd love to. And I'm working on a story at the moment, Silver Dragon, which is the story of how the mother first becomes a dragon rider. And that will be up on our website for free. If people want to sign up, they can get a dragon story for free and sample my writing. That will probably be up there in about a week and a half or 2 weeks. But if they sign up, they'll get it in their inbox immediately. My website is Eileen, E-I-L-E-E-N, Muller, M-U-E-L-L-E-R, author. AUTHOR.com. So if people pop along to EileenMullerAuthor.com, then they will find it. Or I should say in American, EileenMullerAuthor.com.
Yeah, I was wondering if I was mispronouncing your name or not.
I lived in Switzerland for 6 years. So I speak fluent Swiss German, which is where my name came from. So there is an Eileen Muller who's a photographer. If you hit her website, you've got the wrong one.
Okay. That also, I saw that actually.
Do you
have, I know you're on Facebook, but what's your Facebook, Instagram? Give people ideas so how they can get in touch with you.
I haven't started an Instagram account, and my kids are hassling me so much, I know I have to in the next few weeks. But I'm on Twitter as NZMuller, NZMUELLER, and I'm on Facebook as Eileen Muller Author. Yeah, I've got a page set up there, as well as me, just Eileen Muller.
Perfect.
And
thank you so much for coming on the show.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Sherry. It's been lovely to talk with you.
Thank you, and thank you for chatting with Sherry.